This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham for Cynthia Canty. Well, Election Day is just around the corner, and there are three statewide proposals on the ballot. Today, we're going to review Proposal 2, which would change how the maps for legislative and congressional districts are drawn. Joining us now is Eric Lufer, the president of Citizens Research Council of Michigan. Welcome back.
Thanks, Lester. Good to be back.
So let's start with, how do we draw these different districts now?
Since the 1980s, the responsibility has been given to the legislature to do this. Our Constitution says we should have an independent commission, but for a number of reasons that was made invalid, and the court said from here on the legislature should do it and the governor has to approve it.
So what concerns are there when the party in power draws the maps of the state house and Senate and the congressional districts?
So if you have split legislature, if you have legislature of one party and a governor of the other, there's sort of a check and balance that you know you have to get approval, enough votes to get this through and the governor to sign it. But what we've had for the last couple sessions, Republican House, Republican Senate, Republican governor, they've been able to pretty much do what they want. The controls, this criteria that were put in the Constitution were thrown out with that independent commission. The courts told the legislature, you decide what the criteria should be, and the end result is gerrymandering. The end result is creating districts that are very safe for Republican candidates, will maximize the number of votes, and we've seen the results of that. A very Republican congressional team coming from Michigan, continuation of Republican control in the House and the Senate.
We've seen reports from Bridge Magazine recently that indicate the last redistricting done almost 10 years ago was done in secret, paid for by a group headed by people affiliated with the Michigan Chamber of Commerce, making sure that the Republican incumbents were in safe districts. Why might that be a concern? I mean, politics is politics. This is the most partisan thing there is, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right with that, that this is perhaps one of the most political exercises that our elected bodies go through. But part of what we've come to expect in Michigan and I think sort of nationwide is some transparency, some sunshine upon the acts of our policymakers. So we don't expect laws to be made in back rooms anymore. We want them discussed on the floor of the legislature and we can listen and have our media talk about what they heard and have some open meetings. And also the freedom of information. If policy is being developed, we want to be able to go back and look at what the communications were, what process went into this. To have this all happen in secret runs very contrary to all those other ideas of sunshine that we expect in lawmaking.
So this proposal too, what kind of transparency does it call for?
A great deal of transparency. It says that all meetings of this independent commission that would be created are subject to open meetings, and that all communications between commissioners, between the public and those commissioners, all work product of the commissioners, including consultants that are hired to carry this out, would be subject to the freedom of information, and we would all be able to see exactly what goes into making the districts for the people that were represent us.
This independent commission that you mentioned, we had a listener call in to ask.
My name is Christine. I am curious how the people who would serve on this committee will be chosen. Will they be voted? Will they be appointed? Will they volunteer? Just how is it going to be decided?
So how does this independent commission, how is it put together?
It will be a very random process. The Secretary of State will develop an application. We suspect that will be a very rudimentary application, name, address, some indication that you're an eligible voter and some indication of whether you associate with the Republican, Democratic Party or consider yourself an independent, which could mean that you affiliate with a different party. That application will be mailed to a number of potential commissioners, some people that they sort of randomly, are you interested in serving on this? It will also be available on the Secretary of State website for people to come and self-say, you know, sort of raise their own hand, I want to be part of this process. All those names will go into three different buckets, Republican, Democratic, and Independent. And through a sort of convoluted process, names will be drawn out of a hat saying, these four people from the Republican Party, these four people who consider themselves Democrats, and these five people who say they're independent will be on the commission.
Yeah, we actually had a question about that as well.
Hi, this is Josh in Grand Rapids. And what I'm wondering is, what's going to stop these independent voting commissions from being infiltrated by partisan people?
Okay, so they self-identify as Republican or Democrat or independent. Can we verify that?
No, we can't. So anybody who's participated in the primary in Michigan knows that you walk in and you can choose which party you want to vote in the primary system. We don't have a system in some other states where you say, I'm a R, a D, or
you declare,
or anything right. else. So it'll be up to the people, and you're signing your name to this, so you're attesting that this is what you do. How people are held to that is sort of unknown at this point. Part of this process, though, is to sort of weed out the obvious ones. Once you have those three different buckets I talked about, our political leadership in the House and the Senate, the Speaker of the House, the Minority Leader from the House, Majority Leader in the Senate and Minority Leader will each have five, you know, sort of vetoes to go through that list and say, I know that Joe Blow is a practicing Republican. I don't want them in that Democratic pool. Or, you know, some other person is listed as an independent. They're very strongly an R or a D. So you'll be able to pull out a number of names and sort of do this, sort of limit the ability to game the system. What we see in the other states, Arizona and California, have more applicants than spots by far. So even though you might say, I'm going to put my name in and try to game that system, there's still a chance that you won't be randomly selected.
So I want to make sure I follow this right. The Secretary of State will randomly choose out of these three buckets you're talking about, Republican, Democrat, Independent, the number of from each that she's supposed to or he's supposed to. And then of those 13, the majority leaders, minority leaders of the House and Senate say, nope, 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 not that person. They're out, and they get up to five.
Five each, yeah.
Right.
So it's – I don't want to get – you know, it sort of gets real complicated. So let's say you got 500 nominees. The first step is to get them down to 200. So you'll randomly pick 60 R's, 60 D's, six, and then 80 I's. And from that, there's the ability to sort of – with the voir dire in the court system, the jury selection, it's the same sort of thing. I don't want those people in that pool.
Yeah.
So it happens before the 13, but it's the same sort of process.
One of the complaints of opponents of Proposal 2 is that just because you're related to a politician, that should not eliminate you from being eligible to be on the commission. They say that's discrimination. Is that a concern? Is that something that Proposal 2 does?
So, yeah, to some extent. It's sort of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. A lot of times people related to politicians are paying more attention to what's going on and maybe more in tune. But it seems to me the proponents of this, the voters, not politicians, when they were putting this together, wanted to get as far away from political involvement in this as they could. So maybe going too far, but rationally doing it that way, I guess.
The group behind Proposal 2 is called Voters, Not Politicians. If these independent commission members have no official political experience and basically have no familial connection to it, how will they have the expertise to put these maps together? We had one listener specifically ask this question.
Is there some sort of guiding principle that the new commission will have to follow? In other words, is there some way of ensuring that the new districts will follow natural, cultural, and geographic boundaries that actually make sense as opposed to being designed on political priorities?
And there are some federal requirements, right? I mean, the voters, minority votes have to be protected. There has to be some consideration given to cohesive regions. But besides the federal stuff, is there any other guidelines about how these should be drawn?
Yeah. So first of all, the beginning of your question was, will these people know what they're doing?
Right. Yes, it was.
And I would respond to that. We have term limits in Michigan. When we do this in 2021, everyone who took part in 2011 will have been gone. So we sort of built in a freshman team to do this every 10 years, whether we like it or not. The second part of your question are the criteria to be used. And the law, the proposal, the constitutional amendment, offers a number of different criteria that should be used, and it sort of rank orders votes them. So a lot of times you can't do both things. What do you choose? And then it ends up in court. Well, they said this is to be done in rank order. So it starts with the equal population that is part of the federal requirement. The voters, the Voting Rights Act, again, part of the federal requirements. But then it says let's make sure they're contiguous. You can't have part here and part over there with a bunch of space in between. They have to be contiguous. They're supposed to consider diverse populations and communities of interest. What that means is not clear, but it's up to the people to tell the commission, this is our community of interest and we want to stay together to have a political voice. To not provide disproportionate advantage to a political party or to a candidate, and then make sure they consider political boundaries. So let's try to keep cities and townships together and be as reasonably compact as they should. So all those things don't fit together, but the commission is supposed to rank order, you know, in that order, go through them.
Let me go back to my earlier question about expertise. Are they allowed to hire consultants or people to help them do this? You know, it sounds like somebody with some software knowledge might be important in this.
Yes,
to figure it all out.
It'll be very important. And yes, they will hire consultants. They will bring in the people that know how to run the software and sort of understand all the science behind this. Now, that person has to be agreeable to everyone. So you talked before that the State Chamber of Commerce were sort of guiding that before. That's not going to happen.
They'll deny that, by the way. They'll say that they're not affiliated with that group. Just some of their executive officers are, not executive officers.
Neither the chamber nor any other special interest will be able to direct this going forward.
So if these are randomly chosen and we get the 13 and they're who they're supposed to be, who holds them accountable?
They hold each other accountable. There's very little opportunity for us to watch and say, I don't like what the commissioner's doing.
Let's recall them
or anything like that. So it really falls to the commission itself to say this person is erratic and is hard to work with. But it takes a really high supermajority. It takes 10 votes out of that 13 to get that person removed, so that almost unanimity that this is too hard to work with. Now, if the person becomes ill, the person can't participate, there's provisions for that as well that maybe wouldn't have the same high standard. You would suspect somebody in that situation would resign anyways.
What if this independent commission cannot come to an agreement on the map? You talk about that ranking, but that still doesn't get to agreement.
No, it doesn't get to agreement. And this is where it gets interesting from sort of a political science perspective watching this, that it introduces some game theory to the whole thing. So there's three different processes for decision making. The first one is just ask, can you agree on anything here? Now, we know we've got the Republicans on one side and the Democrats on the other, so the chances of them maybe agreeing on anything are not the greatest to begin with. Assuming they can't get along there, then they have rank order voting. So if you have five different plans and the commissioners rank order those to say, I like this one best, this one second best, third best, fourth, fifth best. So what we see when that's used in other places, it pushes people towards consensus. It pushes the parties to think about that. And the third option is just random selection. Now, you think about that. You can't – if that consensus building doesn't work, you could be left with your worst option. As a Republican, there's always that chance that you reach in the bucket, pull out the ping pong ball that says the Democratic plan is the one that will be adopted. So it'll be in everyone's best interest to not let it get to the third option, to figure out how to make it work with – just plain decision-making or that rank order voting. So even though the first plan might not give you everything you want, maybe that second or third plan is agreeable enough that you can go for that.
Another concern is the cost of this redistricting process. Much of the cost last time was paid for by this secret group. Or I guess the group isn't secret, but it was secretly done at the time. Why is the cost a concern?
Well, I think it's a question of before and after. We all are concerned about the taxes we're paying, and given that this would be an escalation of cost, there's that. But then the counter argument is, how much is democracy worth to you? So it would set aside a quarter of the amount of the what the Secretary of State gets out of the general fund now, about $4.5 million per year. This isn't for 10 years. This is really just the 2 years that they would be doing their work. It says that the commissioners would earn a quarter of what the governor makes, and that's about $40,000 a year, as opposed to just having the legislature doing it. We're paying for that to begin with. Assuming this is done in the open, then we're paying for the consultants and that sort of thing. So it is an additional cost. But, you know, again, I go back to that question. What is democracy worth to you? Is it worth paying for that? And in the big picture of everything we spend money on, that is not that much.
I got one more quick question for you. This will be an amendment to the state constitution, which makes it very difficult to change. But what happens if we find that this system needs to be tweaked a little?
So we have to amend the constitution again. That can happen either by the legislature recognizing what's going on and offering an amendment, or through another petition process where you have to collect a number of signatures, have that verified by the Board of State Canvassers. Either route leads to a vote. People have to vote on that and change it that way. We could have a constitutional convention to look at the whole document. That happens every 16 years. And so far, the people have said, we sort of like what we have. We're not interested in that.
Eric Lufer is the president of the Citizens Research Council of Michigan. You can find the proposal to analysis at crcmich.org. That's crcmich.org. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks again for having me.